I don't think so. The Supreme Council's army, as well as the rest of the organized local forces, hold what remains of the barrier. There are hardly any of their warriors here. Additionally, they are about to establish friendly relations with the West. But you're not completely sure. I'm not. Let's just stay out of their sight.
In that case, I have a suggestion. We could level up near the dungeon we found back then with Danger Babe. It's a very quiet place with lots of mobs, and we haven't seen any strangers there at all. Will you show it to me? It's about 4 hours away if we go by foot.
We have to move forward, then. I have to see it, or I won't be able to open a portal from there. If we speed up, we'll get there faster.
I doubt it.
Why is that?
You don't know Theory all that well yet. She has certain issues.
Harry, your name is known to almost everyone, but you keep out of the public eye. I dread to recall everything I've had to deal with before you agreed to give us this modest interview. Why is that? Is that corporate policy or your own secretive nature?
A little bit of both, I guess.
Which one is dominant? I am indeed a private person. Work has always been my number one priority.
What about your number two priority?
Work as well.
Oh, so that's how it is.
I'm not the only workaholic in the corporation, you know, but you are Michael Silver's designated successor.
No comment.
Oh, come on. It's been an open secret for a while now. Everybody knows who Silver's successor is going to be after he dies, although there is an opinion that the moment in question might never come. The old man is known to be extremely apt at outwitting death.
I'm not commenting on that either.
Harry, couldn't you at least give us a hint? Why you? Our readers are puzzled. You are not related to Silver in any way, and you haven't made the impression of being someone spectacular, so why would he choose you above everybody else?
I work hard.
You're not the only one.
I'm a loner, just as he is.
Meaning? He cut off his relatives. I don't have any either, although for different reasons. He was always indifferent to women. I've never managed a steady relationship either. But you're athletic, and one sees as much. Could he see you as his antipode? He's old and decrepit, while you're young. He's always had health troubles, while you are full of pep. Could he be hoping this might help you keep the corporation afloat after he's no longer there? I also look good on photographs, and they say I have the most charming smile among the corporate staff. You could dig for as many similarities or differences as you like, but neither I nor anyone else will be able to answer the question why the old man chose me over the other candidates. But you could always ask him directly.
Well, at least you have a sense of humor.
I'm not joking. Those are the questions only he can answer. I'll have Godzilla look into my window before I get Michael Silver to agree to an interview like that, or to any kind of interview for that matter. From an interview with a young and very promising Second World employee.
Chapter 19. It feels odd to walk down the street of a city in a game and know that anyone wishing to see your name will see two unwieldy words over your head, one of the first three tongue-twisting versions suggested during registration. The day Ross got barraged by heroic titles and lots of other stuff, it became known to everyone in Second World. Later on, it took him a lot of effort to conceal his unique identity. He would occasionally succeed, and fail, too, confusing the hell out of mighty guilds and breaking all the molds. And now he had gotten his proper name back. He was no longer Bubble or anybody else. He was good old Rostendrix Potarentax once again. Why wasn't he afraid any longer? Well, he was a little wiser now, having gained some experience playing the game. Regular players never paid any attention to ubiquitous noobs with unpronounceable names. No one ever paid any attention to them. They were a part of the faceless crowd, so it was unlikely that crowds of adoring fans would turn up all of a sudden. The more attentive ones would only be dangerous outside the peaceful city locations. So he'd just have to avoid being caught in desolate places or in smaller villages without any protection. Even in the larger ones, it would be best to avoid dark alleys. You never knew what could hit you. Thus, you could stay relatively calm, provided you adhered to a few simple rules. However, there was one very disturbing factor. Sources that were only partially reliable told Ross there was a means of eliminating players completely. Its nature was a mystery, and it wasn't known whether it worked in the bigger cities. The quest conditions also stipulated as much, and those could be relied on 100%. However, when he talked to the Emperor, the latter claimed Ross had already possessed everything necessary for the quest to succeed. Did that mean the killer would find it hard to get to him, or could he have misunderstood something? No one gave him any precise instructions, after all. Although the Emperor said nothing about the necessity to level up, maybe he thought it a trifle, or maybe it would be a trifle for him if Ross got killed, too. However, when one wasn't aware of the precise nature of the threat or where it might come from, it didn't make any point to stuff one's head with idle musings. You didn't know how to handle the threat anyway. You just kept vigilant all the time, didn't get too cocky, and kept all the other dangers in mind. You needed to watch the wind and not the bits of fluff it carried. Powerful parties learned to track down Ross in Second World. He wasn't aware of just how that worked. It would be pointless to bother with disguises until he found out. As he found out, it wouldn't help him much, but he could still send them a message he wasn't a coward who would rush to hide in the bushes at the first sign of danger. Ross found digits next to the same monitor connected to an enormous magical computer. These multicolor tables occupied all the walls of the main hall of the stock exchange. They displayed all sorts of item names with their prices scrolling down so quickly that it seemed impossible anyone could make any sense of this flickering array of data. Yet his friend was trying to do just that, and apparently with success. "Hi there, Digits."
"Hi, Ross. Give me a second. I just want to check out the lines at the bottom."
"Sure. Go ahead." Ross started to pore over the tabloid with large sensationalist headlines that he had bought on his way here and now produced out of his bag. It didn't take him long, but Digits didn't make him wait too long either.
"Reading tabloids, eh? Oh, tabloids, schmabloids. There's some information here that's actually useful, nearly classified. Those who know what they're looking for can see it right away, and I happen to know. Who would leak anything of value to a rag like that?"
"You should know that most of the information gathered by intelligence services comes from public sources, such as this." Ross fanned himself with the newspaper.
"Is there any precise information on how to invest one coin and receive two or three the next day?"
"Precise? No. But if you really know what you're looking for..."
"Well, start looking. We'll need that. Got anything for sale?"
"You cut straight to the business."
"Business shouldn't wait.
I've made about 30 items of all sorts. Some of them are pretty cool, but don't dream of getting hundreds of thousands. Crafting wasn't a priority, it was mostly legwork.
Try to find time, and also try to use your hands as well as your head. We need a lot of stuff to sell. I shouldn't be idle. Simple rate fluctuations aren't that lucrative, and you can always lose. Nothing is guaranteed."
"Another profiteering scheme of yours?" Ross pointed at the table.
It's just a real stock exchange. That is to say, more or less fair, but you won't get far without profiteering schemes. I'm involved in a few projects here, and I constantly have to keep an eye on things. I have some important business to discuss with you other than selling trinkets. What kind of business? How lucrative is it? Well, it looks promising so far. We have run into a quest that can cost us our heads, and not just in the game. Well, you're particularly good at getting yourself into the stickiest situations imaginable. I'm not surprised. I noticed as much a while ago. There can be substantial bonuses in case of success, so we'll have to start with leveling up for money, and there'll be a lot of levels for all of us. I know. You've done it before. I heard about it. I'll hire a few NPCs to level up. They'll bring the group up to decent levels in no time. There'll be a place for you, too. You haven't been leveling up at all since the Thilbit Cave. Call yourself a financial tycoon, huh? Can you see I have no time for that? I'm trying to earn as much money as I can. I hardly get any time for a proper nap. Digits, don't you get it? The kind of leveling up we plan to do is a rare opportunity, and I know you always meant to get stronger. I remember how dejected you looked when you were trapped in a useless level zero body. I have already gotten stronger, all thanks to you. I'm nothing like a level zero player now. You're still pretty weak, and don't even argue about it. I won't, but it's quite enough for me. Why would I need more? I already have everything I need. Are you sure? Well, almost everything. Come along with us. You could go all the way up to 100 and something. Your level is that of a total noob right now. You're way behind, man. Level hundreds are soon going to be considered noobs of the lowest order. Players level up in groups, not individually. A few years from now, even level 200 levels will be considered near worthless. I have no time to level up and try to catch up with the likes of you. I have important stuff to do. Such as? What could be more important than leveling up? Ross, do you remember yourself on the very first day? Leveling up was the least of your worries. You didn't even know how it worked. It was locked for me. That's not what I'm talking about. What then? Well, how do I explain it to you? I'm a bit at a loss for words. I had this idea, you know. I asked myself why I had started it all in the first place. What was wrong with being a level zero at any rate? I've got plenty of things to do without any levels, provided I have enough money. Now that you've helped me, I have money at last, and try to keep a finger in every pie. We're both leveling up, in a way, only we have different ways of doing it. Intending to become a second-world oligarch, aren't you? Well, why not? My treatments will cost a fortune. I'm a cripple IRL, after all, and should I manage to scrape up enough for that, what am I supposed to do next? It's pretty hard to return to the life you've had a couple of years ago after such an intermission. I'm not even sure it's possible at all. Too much has been lost, after all. It will be much easier for me here. I have already found my niche. So you refuse to level up with us. Why would you care about your financial manager's level? I wouldn't. I was thinking about you. I know, and I am grateful. Ross, I'll never, ever forget what you've done for me. You can count on me in everything. But if I can't be of much help to you with the leveling up, you might as well leave me alone. I'll be able to invest all that money wisely. So it will be to your ultimate benefit. I'll remain at a low enough level anyway. I have no wish to kill a million mobs just to become stronger than others. All right, I get you. I'm letting this drop then. Or, rather, I have another question. Let me guess. You need money, as always, and as much as you can possibly get. Are you psychic or what? It was an easy guess. How much? Whatever you have. Daylight robbery. I'm just kidding. Given my heroic bonuses, I should manage with 20,000. They are good for having NPCs give you discounts. Really? I wasn't aware. Hey, that's an interesting opportunity.
Think about it while I'm gone.
I sure will. Don't you worry about it. Right. 20,000 are not a problem, but back where I come from, they'd cut your throat without a second thought for that kind of money.
Well, great endeavors require great expenses.
Ross needed a little more, in fact, but he had funds of his own, and didn't want to bleed digits too much. He had business of his own, and invested all of his money, so his need was greater.
"Where are you off to next, Ross?"
"The Mercenary Guild.
And then?"
"I'll recruit a party and start leveling up at once. They cost an arm and a leg, so I shouldn't keep them idle."
"You don't intend to smash your head on a rock, do you?"
"Why should I? We'll use the same old teleport. I'll open it for everyone at once. You know I can."
"I sure do. It's a pity. You caused an absolute furor here during your last visit."
"At the tournament?"
"Tournament, schmurnament. All sorts of things happen there, and a battle between noobs is hardly that great a sensation. Just enough to entertain the marks for an hour. But then you flipped a major bird to the elite poet community, splashing your brains all over their favorite lawn. Now that was real cool. You must harbor some major grudge against poets. Did one of them elope with your girlfriend or some such?"
"To tell you the truth, I've never had any dealings with them whatsoever."
"All right, then it must be your school teachers mocking and humiliating you because you were too lazy to memorize verse."
"I can't say I remember any problems of that sort."
"Well, you've started a trend. Poets recite their verses and then take a dive head first. A means to express the passions raging in their tortured souls. You were the one who started the trend. Might as well be proud of it."
"Morons."
"Why? They're all level zero players, or small fry. Few bother to level up at all. They don't care about their level, and neither do I. They found a different vocation here, so they lose nothing. You have to queue up in the morning if you plan to kill yourself in the evening. It's much more picturesque then. The place has perfect lighting. There are lots of contrasting hues."
"Isn't that a nice way to waste your time in the game? As for me, your financial schemes make more sense, and you don't have to smash your head on the rocks either."
"Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I don't have much traffic with poetry. I like to keep things simple. That's what pays the bills at the end of the day."
"I need a party of your best fighters for 10 days of relatively easy work. My requirements are as follows. Levels upward of 175, but not higher than 205. 2 tanks in heavy armor with lots of HP, 2 healers, one of them at least should have leveled up buffs, a warrior with lots of HP specializing in control spells and capable of casting them on a party of enemies at once, and 3 DPS, all of whom must be mages specializing in different elements. 8 fighters altogether." The dwarf clerk failed to recognize their old customer after such a radical change in his appearance. He scratched himself behind the ear with his quill and said slyly,
"Is the good sir aware that due to certain events that took place recently, the Mercenary Guild has been having certain shortages of military personnel?"
"You always have shortages."
"By no means.
The previous time you were complaining about the battle for the mine. Just trying to raise your prices, I'm sure. What's the story now?"
"The Imperial Chancellery hires our fighters to contain the invasion of the wild hordes from the Locked Lands."
"Yeah, thought as much. Everybody's busy all the time."
"I don't remember you ever using our services. It would be hard to forget a client as cantankerous as you."
"It was shortly afterwards the events at the mine. I had a different appearance back then, trying to avoid the consequences of stardom, as it were."
"I get it, but I still don't remember you."
"I'm telling you, my appearance has altered drastically since then."
"What kind of an assignment was it, anyway?"
"I hired a party of 8 warriors for leveling up a single player at the Fiery Cleft, namely myself."
Hold on. I remember you perfectly well, but it's impossible for you to have looked like that. No one can change that much. The customer was a young girl, really new, slim and petite. A gust of wind could blow her away. And you're a serious-looking male, tall, with wide shoulders, and some 10 years older. That's impossible.
Well, that's where you're wrong. A lot of really improbable things turn out to be possible whenever I'm involved.
Who could have thought? How can anything like that happen?
Well, now you know that whenever you decide to cheat on your wife, your new girlfriend may not be quite what you may have expected.
By the name of everything that's holy, how am I supposed to live with this knowledge?
No concern of mine. Figure something out. It's hard for everyone these days. So, what about my assignment? As you realize, I'm a regular.
Not quite. It's just the second time that you have an assignment for us. You need 3 to become a regular.
I'm also a hero, the likes of which have never been seen in Second World.
Why would you say that?
Take a closer look.
Yikes! You're right. Sorry for having failed to recognize you at once. Would you like some tea with lemon? Or a strong drink, perhaps? I have this special dwarfish horseradish liquor for special occasions.
Keep it for my 3rd assignment. Then you'll welcome me as a bona fide regular. Right now, I'd like a discount and a party of strong warriors. The discount also needs to lack nothing in fortitude. You don't have heroes like me visit you every day.
Let's see what we can do. Are you headed for the fiery cleft again?
Not this time.
Where, then?
A secret location, far away from here. There'll be no one else but us there. I like to keep things private.
A dungeon, is it?
Not quite. You asked for a different party last time. I have taken a few errors into account. Now I need this kind of party.
Aren't you concerned about the level gap between yourself and our fighters?
I'll deal with that.
You are choosing mages as your primary DPS characters. Why don't you have an archer with you?
The party will have an archer, but the mages will be a lot more useful. Our opponents will be vulnerable to element magic with their low resistance.
On the other hand, an archer only needs a bow and arrows, whereas mages consume mana by the gallon.
I am prepared to supply them with mana restoration elixirs at my own expense. I can also share my own mana with them. I have a special spell to that effect.
But you won't be of much use. Your level is just too low.
Never mind the levels. I'll be useful. Don't ever doubt that. How much do I owe you?
The previous time
I paid 4,000 for a day of work. You also said that you could give a discount for a week, 25 instead of 28.
You have an excellent memory.
It's near perfect in as much as money is concerned. This time I supply the party with elixirs and excellent food, and I'll take care of the transportation too, so there won't be any problems with that. Apart from myself and a high-level archer, the party will be supported by a tank, albeit a low-level one, and a flighting buffer. The two of us have resurrection spells and lots of other useful skills. Overall, your warriors will be under reliable protection and well provided for. Apart from that, I'm offering a bulk contract for 10 days. And this isn't the first time we work together either. Besides, I'm a great hero, favored by the Emperor himself. The same goes for my friends. Taking all of the above into account, I would think it fair if your services cost me exactly 20,000. It's a beautiful number. You can't help liking it. The dwarf took on an alert look immediately, winced, and said,
"It may be beautiful, but it sure lacks volume. You're planning to take the fighters away to some unknown location. What if it's extremely dangerous, and their poor children face the risk of becoming orphans?"
"How about you pick the childless ones? I am appalled by children's tears, and would naturally hate to pay for something that would make children cry."
"We don't have enough free fighters. How am I supposed to find so many childless ones?"
It is common knowledge that most mercenaries only marry after retiring, and they retire early. If someone had impregnated some poor girl and then went off to war, I certainly cannot condone that, and once again, I would dread to give money to the likes of such people.
That's all fine and dandy, and I can find no objections, but you were looking for warriors of a much lower level the previous time, and now you want the best. They're the lifeblood of our establishment. It would be a pity to sell their services for such a pittance. You respect our glorious fighters, don't you? How about expressing your respect monetarily?
How much does respect go for these days?
33,000.
That kind of respect borders on groveling. 25,000.
30. But that would imply a bit of a slight.
Feel slighted all you like, but 26 is where it stops.
29.
27. Or I get out of here and head east. They have much better warriors, and their mercenary guilds are reported to have a much friendlier attitude. They'd love the publicity, too. And they're your competitors, by the way. Everyone will keep saying that great warriors are only appreciated in the east, while all the west cares about is money.
It will cost you an arm and a leg to bring a bunch of eastern mercenaries through all those teleports.
I have no problems there. I can transport them for free.
All right. How about you tip me personally with another 500 as a token of your respect? Beer money, you know.
I wonder how many barrels you could buy for that kind of money. I only hope you don't wet your pants after all that beer.
I wouldn't mind soaking my entire house for that kind of money, so how about it? An extra half a grand? Aye or nay?
27,500, and I hope your house gets flooded. So, is it a deal?
It's a deal.
A flash of blinding light, a short yell, and the player who had been trying to approach the coveted doors turned into a wisp of smoke. Another failure. Actually, Eric Coleman didn't see any reason to hire a professional burglar. He was one of Second World's most prominent criminals, and his gaming credo was to break into the best guarded treasuries. He could always find a way to sneak in without being seen by the guards. Not a single lock could resist him. He was a thief extraordinaire. But why would you try to pick a lock in a gate you couldn't even reach? They had already tried to do it from a distance. Archers trained to deal colossal damage, and mages with beefed-up high-level spells have all tried to shoot the gate from every position, following every tactical scheme imaginable dozens of times. The total amount of energy spent would likely leave a thermonuclear explosion far behind. The area before the entrance suffered the greatest damage. The crystals were hard as diamonds, but even so they chipped and cracked. Yet there was nary a scratch on the gate itself. While every player to participate in one of those acts of vandalism would immediately be sent to their respawn point. It would be impossible to resurrect them, a blinding electric spark, a wisp of smoke rising toward the ceiling. And it was all over. All that remained of a player was a dark spot on the ground, and whatever items they would lose. There were no other gates of this kind anywhere in Second World. They were a genuinely indestructible object, and those should not exist in the game. Today was the burglar's turn. He didn't even manage to do anything. He just approached without heeding the warning. The door didn't warn you twice. A flash, and you were gone. Eric had no idea how to proceed, nor did anybody else. The latest method failed. What else could they invent? There was nothing like dynamite in the game. Should he call a council of alchemists so that they could brainstorm a suitable explosive production method? What did one need for it anyway? To mix up some ingredients? Eric had a very vague idea of the subject. The quest was stuck, hopelessly, one step away from the final stage.
They didn't have anyone who could make the door open by itself in their party. It was supposed to be the greatest hero of all times. Did such a person even exist? It is suspected that the mysterious Rostovstev has a chance. He had a whole bunch of spectacular achievements to his name, after all, but that was far from certain. His achievements had all been studied in great detail, after all, and nothing of interest was ever found. But if even he would fail to advance here, who could accomplish this? Why did the quest that the Second World had originally been created for start to stall in such a lamentable way? Who was sticking spokes in their wheels? Was there any way of accomplishing the final mission, or had the game gone completely mad? The old man was tired of waiting, and it wasn't just him. What they expected was a result, the main result. Time was short, and no one had any patience left at all. Damn that door! Chapter 20. The orc in heavy armor stopped suddenly, turning toward the group of ugly golems that he had drawn toward him from his half of the cave hall. The 15-foot-tall giants had a steel gleam. Their features were so rough they could have been chiseled with an axe, and their grimaces were as ugly as they. Their massive, log-like arms were so long their knuckles could touch the ground, and the unwieldy giants used them for extra support when they moved. They were made of metal, clay, or rocks, and moved rather slowly, yet they were relentless trackers. An irate golem could track its prey for days on end until it succeeded, and then they would start pounding at whoever had pissed them off with their massive fists that could get through the highest defense. No matter how tough you were, you'd be unlikely to win such a battle. But that only concerned a fair one-on-one melee fight. Ranged attacks were a whole different kettle of fish. Golems could only answer with an ability that would slow down their opponent for a while. They used it immediately after receiving ranged damage. It didn't take off any HP, but the character became a crippled snail that could be easily reached and dealt with mercilessly. Archers would be totally useless in such a battle. Every golem had an incredibly high defense, and you'd likely use up all your arrows without taking off half of its HP bar. Once it would reach you, and that would happen sooner or later, you could but prepare for instant death. Only the strongest warriors in heavy armor would still stand after such mighty pounding. Anybody else would most likely enter a state of shock and never come out of it again. In other words, it was the kind of quarry that no classes specializing in physical attacks would find easy. Dealing damage was hard, there were lots of problems, and it was extremely hard to make such hunts worth your while, even though you could get decent loot if you succeeded. After all, over the time it took to vanquish one of those giants, you could dispatch and loot 5 to 7 mobs of a similar level without any unnecessary heroics. There may be less experience in this case, but the quantity would compensate for that. It was quite different with the mages. Golems were extremely vulnerable to spells. Any resistances they had were to specific schools. However, mages themselves were very vulnerable to slowing down spells. They hit them the hardest, all but gluing them to a single place for a long time. Then the enormous walking rock, ugly as sin, could approach you slowly and end the fight in 1 or 2 strikes. Even if it took more, they'd be happy to hammer away at you until you fell down dead. And golems were tenacious bastards. The party gathered by Ross was ideal for hunting these bulky monstrosities.
The tanks could hold the mobs collected from all across the location in a compact group. A warrior would stun all those enormous sheep brought to the slaughter by mass control spells, and mages concerted their efforts to deal area damage. A few flashes of different colors, and nothing was left of the golems but piles of rubble and puddles of molten metal. Tang and Danger Babe helped Ross with the choice of this place. It was called the Rock Gardens, large open caverns where thousands of golems roamed amidst the stalactites and the stalagmites. They were absolutely harmless and had zero aggression unless you attacked them first. A tank would hit as many as possible with attack-provoking skills, gathering a train from a large area and then bringing all the mobs to where the mages and players of other classes stood waiting. That would be followed by a well-coordinated, massive attack. At best, a few elite monsters with plenty of HP would remain standing. Those would be held motionless by a warrior and a tank. Theory helped with her daggers, too. Assassins had some contact control skills, too. It would be over in a few minutes. Then another tank would bring a bunch of mobs to the killing ground, and the genocide of the giants would continue. Ross would strike first. The very nature of his chaos aura made it work even against enemies with high resistances. Vulnerable golems were an easy target, and they didn't benefit from the enormous level gap at all. He only had to cast it once to take 10% of their HP. The spell did not distinguish between regular mobs, elite mobs, and bosses. It would take off the same percentage off everyone. Very fair, that. Next was the turn of three NPC mages. Spells that could hit an area or a group of enemies took up lots of mana. He had to share his magical energy with the mercenaries in between attacks. That wasn't particularly effective, since the process took time, and his personal reserves weren't exactly bottomless. His insanely high regeneration rate didn't help much. The party used up an enormous amount of mana. Therefore, the costly potions were consumed in crates. It was a pity the game dynamics did not permit to use those without a cooldown period. In that case, they would have lost no time at all. Danger Babe helped with the mana as well, but she was even less useful than Ross. When all the mages and all the support characters used up nearly all of their mana, they needed to take a rest. The regeneration of HP and MP became considerably faster in that case. The regeneration speed depended on whether or not the character was fed well enough, and Ross's high cooking stat came in really handy there. In general, the party was balanced in a very effective manner. And then it was his turn again. Dramdur, a green-skinned orc tank, was dragging a train of at least 50 giants that trailed behind him sluggishly. It wasn't the biggest group they'd met, but it wasn't the smallest one either. A few more attempts of this sort, and they'd have to search for a different hall, for there'd be no more mobs left here. They would reappear, there were always enough of those appearing out of walls and stalactites, but the party was unlikely to return here. There were more halls of an even greater size further on, after all. The lower you got down the Rock Gardens labyrinth, the darker it got, the more mobs there were, the larger the packs, and the more of them you encountered. Their levels kept growing, too. They would soon get to a point where the party's capacity would be insufficient. The giants that inhabited those murky depths were scary enough even for the invincible Imperial Guards to tread carefully around them, lest they draw their attention. Chaos Aura struck the entire crowd. 9 days of extreme leveling up turned the party into a single mechanism, and there were hardly any misunderstandings at all. This time was no exception. As soon as the golems turned towards the impertinent noob, a warrior approached and struck the ground with his halberd. All the mobs were instantly showered with cones of light, capable of paralyzing the target for a period between 3 and 8 seconds. This was enough for the three mages to strike the mobs with area spells that didn't only deal damage, but also had some controlling effects. They may not have been particularly efficacious or reliable, but with three spellcasters, the mobs hardly stood a chance. A warrior would then use another ability, while the mages fired at will, aiming to take off as many HP as they could, as fast as they could. They succeeded. Golems started to fall down by the dozen, disintegrating into ugly piles of rock and metal mixed with clay. Some of the most persistent ones with the most HP still stood, but they weren't allowed to move 1 inch. The giants were trying to reach the mages now, using their slowing down skills, but what was the point if they couldn't take off a single hit point? None whatsoever. They were really close to victory, with only 3 elite golems left standing. The mages no longer wasted their mana on area spells and hit their targets individually, saving mana. Tang rushed toward the battlefield without even waiting for the rest of the golems to fall and started to search the remains for trophies. A tank whose level was insufficient for participating in battle alongside the others wasn't particularly useful, so his role was looting most of the time, as well as backup in case some mob would break through. Ross joined him. He was more proficient at extracting valuable loot from fallen enemies. There were the soul crystals, for instance, coveted so much by necromancers and all kinds of summoners. They were also used by enchanters and even high-level alchemists. They could only be harvested by specialized classes. "Hey, Ross, there's a rare cap here, just what an archer would need." "That's cool, Tang. Keep looking, or we won't manage before the second group arrives, and they're on their way already." "Your cache has been discovered by a high-level creature. Your cache has been discovered by a high-level creature. Your cache master level grows by 1. Current value 11. Your cache has been discovered by a high-level creature." Ross stopped and raised his hand. "Stop. Dramdior, don't collect any more golems. Tartus Vex, get these over as soon as you can, and then just stay put." "What happened?" asked Danger Babe loudly. "We have guests." When they were just preparing to level up, Ross made a few dozen simple caches with cheap objects near the entrance to the rock garden crater and along the pathways leading into its depths. Many players did that. After all, if someone passed your cache without noticing it, you would get a few points to a rather useful auxiliary stat. However, Ross left the caches there for a different purpose. He was using them as an alarm system, recollecting how useful they had proved to be back in the day. The messages he was getting now told him that a high-level player had discovered his cache. A weaker one would have passed by without noticing anything. The envoys of the Supreme Council of the Locked Lands got to the capital the day before yesterday. 2 days later, an advanced player or a group of those managed to find their way here and discover the entrance to a crater with an extensive network of halls at the bottom filled with high-level golems. It could be a simple cartographer roaming a formerly locked terrain frantically and trying to compile the first map of the area that could be sold for a decent amount of money, or someone interested in unknown lands decided to study the strange crater, or a party of warriors sent to get Ross. The location was perfect, the leveling up was great, the loot was good, and there were plenty of mineral resources of different levels. Ross and his companions benefited tremendously from being here, but all good things come to an end. Tang got it immediately and said,
Let's get going. It's time. There's a whole day of leveling up left, and we've paid for it, said Danger Babe plaintively. Forget about it. Ross waved his hand. It wasn't that much money. Besides, the next time that greedy dwarf will remember that they got paid for a day of doing nothing, and he might be more pliable. Well, that makes sense, Danger Babe nodded. I'm already sick of these creaky old golems. They're boring as hell. I'm sick of them, too, Theory agreed. My bow is virtually of no use here. I'm sending the mercenaries home, and then we march toward the cave on the double, declared Ross. But we still need to finish off the last golems. They still had time. No matter how quick the party that may have come here to find Ross would be, they would still have to cross a few dozen halls connected with entangled corridors. Even if they took the correct turn every time, there were still about 10 minutes left or more. But that wasn't much, so they'd have to hurry. It didn't take them long. It didn't take them too long to say their goodbyes to the mercenaries either, and the 8 NPCs disappeared in the portal opened by Ross. However, the characters controlled by players remained. They had a way of surprising their pursuit. The secret dungeon discovered by Tang and Danger Babe as they explored the rock gardens for the first time. They could level up a bit more there. Ross was still at 123, his diligent attempts at leveling up notwithstanding. Others were in a slightly better situation. They were at 100 to begin with. But they wouldn't be able to get any further until the level of so much as a single player in the party is below the requirements of the quest. Attention, heroes, you have found a second world wormhole. It is one of the many places where the forces of chaos resident in the first world have found a way through. This dungeon is their rightful domain. Heroes, should you enter it, the door leading back to your own world will close. It will only open in the event of your demise, or if all the creatures of chaos that guard their territory perish. The forces of chaos won't think twice about sending reinforcements after the final guardian falls, so you shouldn't linger too long after your victory. Attention! Once you cross the threshold that leads to the domain of chaos, the passage will close within a minute. No further entry will be possible, and the only ways out will be teleport scrolls, special skills, or rebirth at a bind point. The exit will also open if you defeat the Army of Chaos. Attention, you will not be able to bind anywhere on Chaos-controlled territory. Attention, if you enter the Domain of Chaos, you will receive the title of Wormhole Pathbreakers. The Wormhole Pathbreakers are rewarded with a higher chance of receiving valuable items during the first exploration run. Attention, the territory that lies beyond the Veil of Mist is dangerous and controlled by the forces of chaos. We strongly recommend to explore it with a group of strong allies. Recommended level of allies, 130 or higher. Recommended number of allies, 8 or more. Tang is at 130, I'm at 129, and you, Ross, are at a measly 123, Danger Babe said, calculating. We're not strong enough. On the other hand, Theory is at 194, said Ross. Well, that's the reason the dungeon level is higher. It reacts to the average value, after all, and she's gonna cripple the mobs, so we'll get fewer trophies. Well, the level gap between her and them will only amount to a third. Also, her strength and attack don't allow her to deal any serious damage unless it's a critical hit. Also, I'm a really lucky guy. Basically, we just need enough space in our bags to grab everything. Anyway, Danger Babe, why would you grumble? We have already discussed it many times and come to an agreement. I'm shutting up already. Sorry, Theory. I'm just nervous. I've never been in a dungeon like this before. All right, let's get going. We can't stay here forever, after all.
Attention, the dungeon has been locked. You can no longer receive reinforcements. Attention, you receive the title of a 2X Chaos Source Pathbreaker. Title bonus, +2 to cartography, +2 to perception. When you join a guild, a party, or a raid group, all the members of the respective guild, party, or raid group receive half the bonus for the duration of your stay. Attention, achievement completed. 2X Chaos Source Pathbreaker. Achievement bonus, +1 to perception, +1 to arcane knowledge, +1 to essence of things, +1 to speed, +1 to luck. Bonus effect, permanent. Achievement unlocked, 3X Chaos Source Pathbreaker. Discover another chaos source to complete the achievement. Bonus, 6 points to random secondary stats, 2 points to random auxiliary stats.
Hey, I received a reward, and it's not too shabby at all. Hooray!
Danger Babe looked overjoyed. Tang peered into the depths of the corridor that led into darkness and shook his head.
I'm afraid I'll have to be a bit of a wet blanket.
Like how?
It will take a few days to clear this dungeon.
So, what about it?
Well, the main item on the menu is our favorite, golems, and some of us appear to be sick of them already. We have entered their lair, and they will defend it. That is to say, the local golems will be aggressive, and they'll have a lot more HP than the ones we hunted in the gardens.
Oh no!
Theory and Danger Babe exclaimed in unison. Lebdion was the military leader of the Drunken Monkeys Guild. He was the one responsible for the training of the best warriors from what was a major Eastern Sector clan. He was obviously chagrined about the fact that the clan management decided to use their well-honed skills in a venture that was doomed from the start. Yet the management opined differently. After all, the laws of the Second World were simple and unbreakable. Since the departure of the gods, there was no one and nothing that would be impervious to destruction. Even the strongest creatures were mortal. All one needed was a party capable of handling them. There were bosses that could not even be defeated by concerted efforts of thousands of players. Their levels were simply insufficient. But there would be hundreds of players leveling upwards of 300 at some point. Then they could get back to those monsters and get their revenge. In the meantime, they could put 100 characters out of commission with a single attack. And yet, there was nothing mysterious about those bosses. Although no one had managed to kill them yet, all the players who took part in such battles saw their HP bars flicker and shrink. But Lebdion's warriors were sent to fight an enemy that was unlike all the others. There were many attempts to kill it, with all kinds of parties and methods, cunning schemes as well as brute force. Yet no one has ever seen its red bar blink once. None of the attempts resulted in the loss of so much as a single hit point. All battles against the terrifying and invincible Bug, or Smiley Face, as he was also known, followed a simple yet very dramatic pattern. First, the mob would be attacked by a party of players, who would then get stunned by a mass control effect that could not be escaped. Then he would devour each and every one of them, joking and bantering all the time. This would be accompanied by the crunching of bones, sounds of munching, and complaints about the toughness of the meat, or, on the contrary, praises to its outstanding gastronomic qualities. The players devoured alive had to listen to it until the very moment of death, and they were looking forward to it by the time the monster started chewing them. There was absolutely no way of stopping this. The accursed paralysis spell wouldn't let you move so much as a finger. And players who had ended up in the maw of the permanently ravenous bug would often get mental issues IRL afterwards.
There were even cases of suits filed against a corporation that allowed its customers to be treated in such a horrendous manner. It was the drunken monkey's turn today. The council of the clan leaders did not heed Leb Dion's warnings. The prize glimmering at the horizon that would never be reached just looked too enticing. Any guild to become the first to defeat such a monster in the history of the Second World would become famous for ages to come. Even if they only managed to take some HP off Smiley Face, no matter how little, it would still be an unprecedented achievement. Every guild needed publicity, and they were prepared to go to all kinds of lengths to get it. After all, publicity meant access to new sources of income in the game, as well as ability to recruit new players, newbies showing promise, as well as experienced players. And now publicity demanded that Leb Dion's best fighters should let themselves be eaten alive at the quiet edge of a spectacular wood. He did not see any alternative. Smiley Face was invincible, after all. But the leaders were of a different opinion. Take Dreaming Herb, for example, the very first player in the history of Second World to level up to 300. He was also the first to get to 301, and 302 couldn't be all that far behind. There was even a saying, "A herb might sleep and dream, but not Dreaming Herb." He hardly ever logged off. Leb Dion had good reasons to believe he would run into serious problems IRL because of that any day now. That often happened to players who liked to overstep themselves. Dreaming Herb flatly refused to participate in today's hunt. He was terrified at the prospect of losing so much as a fraction of a percent of his precious XP, so he declined to lose any in a battle with an opponent that could not be defeated by definition. He didn't care one whit about the honor of the drunken monkeys. He was a loner and an egotist, and only needed the guild for the bonuses he could get from it. On the other hand, the guild also took advantage of his achievements, so it was to everybody's benefit. No one would kick out a player like that just because his own private interests went against the decision of the leader's council. The scout on the wyvern descended and shouted, "It's approaching! Get ready!" Leb Dion sighed. At his level, any loss of experience is rather uncomfortable, and the warriors wouldn't be happy either. Some might revolt and decide to leave the clan altogether. That would weaken the drunken monkeys. But he couldn't go against the council's decision. The only way of leaving a battle with the bug alive, and not via its digestive tract, was to fight the mob one-on-one. Sometimes it would spare such fighters and let them go without eating them, but that wasn't the case today. 365 of the guild's best fighters had gathered at the edge of the woods, and further back there was a complex system of ravines hiding several other large parties ready to launch a flank attack any moment. He could only hope that the reserves would be prudent enough to stay hidden once the vanguard became Bug's meal. The trees ahead started to crack under someone's heavy footsteps. The fighters tensed, their hands clenching mind-bogglingly valuable weapons procured from the strongest bosses or imperial treasuries, or created by Second World's finest craftsmen. If one sold all those swords, staffs, bows, warhammers, and so on, one could buy a cruise ship. With all the equipment, there might be enough money for an aircraft carrier. The noise was getting louder. Leb Dion could see the shaking treetops already. Some foreign object flashed among the leaves, and again, "Archers! Get ready!" barked Leb Dion. The best archers released around 150 arrows. Should one of them get lucky and manage to lay a paralysis effect on the bug, the monster would freeze for 3 or 4 seconds. However, no one's had such luck in the entire history of Second World, and that was the reason for Lebedion's skepticism. A tall tree fell with a loud crack, the tall bushes parted, and an unnaturally thin leg stepped out, followed by another. They supported a ridiculous body, a perfect sphere of bright yellow, some 18 feet in diameter. Some daubster designed it with a thin, dark mouth, a nose that looked like a vertical stroke of the pen, and two dots for eyes, assuming that would be enough. And it was, come to think of it. The bug bore a great physical resemblance to a graphical object used to express a wide range of emotions from mild amusement to wild mirth, the so-called smiley face emoticon. That was why the most horrendous monster in the Second World was known